Welcome to the Healthcare IT Today interview series. We feel lucky to be able to talk to so many smart, passionate, and knowledgeable people in healthcare. Now, we're taking our favorite interviews and sharing them with you. So sit back, relax, and enjoy perspectives on the world of health IT.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining. I'm John Lin, the founder and chief editor at Healthcare IT Today. We're excited to have you join us for this webinar. We're going to be talking about some easy techniques to improve your IT compliance and automation in this digital health world. We have a distinguished panel that we're going to have a really lively discussion. That was the goal of this webinar, is to see how many different points of automation that we can throw at you that you might want to consider for your organization. Also to look at compliance and some of the challenges you deal with compliance, and how do we make that easier for you? Healthcare is one of the most regulated industries. And so, you know, anything we can do to make it easier is a good thing for, you know, for an organization to make it simpler. I think we all need that in this kind of burnt out society that we're living in. So excited to kick it off. Again, I'm John Lin, the founder, chief editor at Healthcare IT Today. We're going to introduce our other panelists. But before we do, a couple of little housekeeping items. First up, we would love to have any questions that you have. So throughout the discussion, if you have any questions, there's the Q&A section of Zoom where you can click and submit your questions. You can also see, I think, some of the other questions other people have asked, and we'll look at those questions throughout. And if it makes sense, we'll incorporate it into the discussion itself. If we don't get to it during the main discussion, we'll answer them at the end to make sure everyone's questions get answered. So please submit any questions you have or any comments. We're happy to incorporate that into our discussion as well. And then, of course, if you're on social media, we're all on Twitter, X, I guess is what it's called these days. Be sure to, mention us as you hear different things that are being said. I'm at Tech Guy, at Charisse May MBA is Charisse's Twitter account. And of course, for Dan, we have the Ad Exclaimer account. So be sure to mention those as you hear interesting insights and perspectives. We always love seeing what people are saying in the Twitter sphere. So be sure to share and highlight those items as well as we go. So that's a few logistics. Let's dive into the real meat of the content, which is the discussion we're going to have today about IT compliance and automation and how we can make that easier for all of you. As we start off, let's go through and do some introductions. As I said, I'm John Lin, the founder and chief editor at Healthcare IT Today. Healthcare IT Today is a community of health IT professionals. We've published over 17,000 articles. We have 3 different podcasts with, I think, 600 audio and video episodes. So just create a ton of great healthcare IT content for those trying to improve what they're doing with technology and healthcare. We also have a sway.health community, which is our healthcare marketing community. That's sway with 2 A's, .health, which is a great area for healthcare marketers and great community. We do an annual conference, share a lot of content that way. So that's a little bit about myself. Charisse, you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
I will. Thank you, John. I'm Charisse Maynard. I'm the founder at Charisse.tech. I'm also the co-founder at Nostra Data and one of the owners at Hit Like a Girl Pod. I've been doing this business for 20 plus years now. I love, love, love compliance. And I love talking shop with John. So I'm excited to be here today.
Thanks, Charisse. It's good to have you here. And as someone who literally ran a practice, did the operations, I can't wait to hear your insights and perspectives. So Dan, you want to go next?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, John. Hi, everyone. Dan Swashberg here. I'm a VP of Product and Customer Marketing here at Exclaimer. Sort of similar to Charisse, sounds like we've both been in the market for a long time. I've been over 20 years in technology, across hardware, software, services, SaaS, including companies like HP, BlackBerry, and Mindcast. Joined Exclaimer about a year ago. And I work closely with customers to really try and understand what their challenges and needs are. And I work with our product teams to try and build an offering that delivers some clear outcomes and value based on what they're looking for. So yeah, really pleased to be here today. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Excited to hear your insights and perspectives. And, you know, Exclaimer has a really interesting product that I think will be of interest to many who are listening. I'll go ahead and stop the sharing on the presentation so you can see us in all our glory. But yeah, excited to kind of talk about what's happening with organizations today. You know, when I look at healthcare, as I kind of mentioned, it's one of the most regulated industries out there. You know, I was comparing to someone, I said, yeah, what, like the nuclear industry might beat us? Like, you know, like, other than that, I can't think of anyone else, right? You know, maybe the rockets are close. You know, there's famously Judy from Epic has a shirt that says, health IT is harder than rocket science, which is true. And I think part of that complication is all of the regulations that we have. And in making sure that we can comply with that is really important. And I think this has really been exacerbated, in my view, by the number of hacking attempts, the number of security things that are happening, you know, that we have to deal with now in healthcare. Before, you throw up a firewall and you're secure. You know, now you have to do a lot more to ensure security, let alone, you know, many of these organizations are getting bigger. I remember one CIO saying, my worry is my 20,000 points of vulnerability, which is the 20,000 people who could do all sorts of things, you know, whether it's a security issue, whether it's a, you know, a HIPAA violation, whether it's, you know, even just billing or other brand related efforts. All of those people represent a challenge for your compliance. So hopefully today we can dive into some ways to make that easier for healthcare organizations as they approach their compliance efforts. But also, one of the beautiful things that's happening right now is all the automation that's happening. So how can we use automation to simplify people's lives and improve it and reduce burnout, which we know is a kind of a universal challenge for people, I'd say, not just in healthcare, but throughout life. So you know, that's kind of a little premise of what we're going to be talking about. But maybe let's kick it off. Dan, you can start us off talking about what's going to happen to a healthcare organization that maybe doesn't embrace compliance tools and automation. You know, how do you see that playing out for an organization that says status quo is fine? I don't need to improve my tools and automation.
Yeah, I mean, in a nutshell, John, I think, you know, you're looking for trouble, right? You know, with all the regulations, you know, that are there and put in place, you know, it's sometimes easy to forget that healthcare is a competitive market, right? And really what any healthcare organization and arguably any organization, but particularly in healthcare, is and should be really focused on is trust, right? At the end of the day, your business is trust. If a patient or somebody that you're working with doesn't trust you, they're not going to use you. They're not going to work with you. They're going to look elsewhere. And, you know, arguably people are sort of handing over what is potentially their most valuable data, right? Their personal data, their personal, you know, their healthcare information. And to your point, you know, that type of information is right at the top of the list of, you know, hackers and fraudsters. You know, if they can get their hands on that type of data, that type of information, you know, they can either try and extort you for it back or sell it to the highest bidder, right? And that kind of information is like gold dust. So I think for any healthcare organization, that really puts a huge amount of pressure to make sure that you are at the forefront and you're doing all that you can to make sure that, you know, your organization is protected, your employees are protected, and arguably most importantly, that the people that you work with and that you deal with every day, your patients and their data is protected. And if not, you know, reputational damage, data loss, legal and financial sanctions, and potentially worst case scenario, you actually can't compete. You're not commercially viable. You know, so, you know, I think it's certainly not something that any organization can ignore from my perspective.
Yeah. Charisse, what would you add?
I would add that we saw, right, coming out of the pandemic, what we saw is that we can scale stuff quickly, but not necessarily in the best way. We saw kind of that wild west of automation tools and that type of thing. But what we didn't see is how we were handling the security of all those things, that all those moving parts and all the data we were moving back and forth. And coming out of the pandemic, if you can say we're completely out of it, you still see some of those mistakes being made. I think historically, organizations, where it comes to compliance, it's not the highest on their, it's not their highest order of thinking in the organization, which is always a mistake. It's one of those areas that can save you so much money, but it doesn't receive always the attention it deserves. And I think now, as we go forward to 2024, and we see all these changes, we see like the QHINs coming on board, we see we're starting to take another look at HIPAA and all that kind of stuff. Providers and organizations have to realize now that, okay, we have to be very serious about how we're handling this. And I think they tend to think it's going to be a heavy lift when it can be made more seamless and less expensive if they go about it the right way.
That's interesting. I mean, when I think about this question, I look at it from a different perspective a little bit, in that I don't think there are a lot of like healthcare organizations that deliberately don't think about compliance, right? You know, like it's not an active, like strategic decision, right, to be like not compliant. You know, to your point, Charisse, I think it's more that it's just not as big a priority as maybe some other things like revenue, right? You know, we know margins are small for many healthcare organizations, and so they focus on the revenue aspects, and they're, you know, it's not that they don't want to be compliant. It's not that they want to execute in a risky way. It's just, it does, you know, it's kind of like ignorance is bliss to some degree, right? Which it is until it's not, right?
Yeah.
Until you have a breach or some issue.
Yeah, you even see now, like even with like the information blocking rules and those type of compliance issues, they are actually, a lot of these organizations lack significant guidance on how to get these things done in a certain way. Say, to your point, yeah, I don't think they're doing it deliberately, but it's like when they look at it, it looks like this is going to be a lot to handle. And it is just easier to slightly overlook it and concentrate on the revenues instead of putting a full-fledged compliance and automation program in place.
Yeah. And that's what I see when I talk to a lot of people, is that it's not so much, you know, of course they're compliant to some degree, right? You know, you have a compliancy officer in every healthcare organization. You know, you've got your HIPAA security risk officer, right? You've got a lot of people designated for compliance, but sometimes it gets put to the back burner, right? To ensure that you're complying with everything that needs to happen. Plus, let's be honest, some of these are a really heavy lift, right? It takes a lot of work to be compliant the way that, you know, the government wants you to be compliant. So I think that's where, you know, today's discussion should be interesting, is what can we do to make their lives easier? And to me, one of the answers to that question is automation. And you know, I think compliance is one pressure that's happening that's pushing people to use automation, because automation can help them be compliant, be able to do that at scale, at lower costs, with fewer people, since they can't hire enough people either. So, you know, to me, that's automation. What other pressures do you see that are driving healthcare organizations to embrace automation? Maybe Charisse and then Dan?
Yeah, credentialing. So, you know, for the longest time, we were worried about physicians being able to practice at the top of their fields across state lines and that type of thing. So credentialing became an issue as far as getting them credentialed in these different states for these different organizations so that they're able to practice. And now even with medical compacts, we still have issues with credentialing. One of the top calls I get is from providers, their staff will say, hey, how can we get credentialing done quicker, you know, so that doctors can practice where they need them to be. And I'm always like, that is the perfect opportunity for automation, right? Compliance, where you're dealing with person's credentials, you can have real-time credentialing done, as opposed to some of the stuff that we see organizations still doing, like going to the different state boards and waiting 24, 48 hours for something to come back when they can get something like right away. So I look at credentialing is one of the big areas that I love to see organizations switch over to, because it's a huge deal for them. I love to see when they are with the information blocking and the No Surprise Act, when they can give patients the information they need at the point of service and right there before they even start performing any procedures on them, it's readily available. So that's a perfect place where they have to be compliant, but they also can utilize automation in the process.
Well, and I want to dive into some of those things, but I mean, you're highlighting two things: regulatory pressure, right? Mm-hmm. That's pushing automation. That's a good one. And the, you know, your staffing one. We all know that every healthcare organization has issues with staffing and not, you know, how do they credential their doctors and nurses? And the turnover has been so high because of COVID and some other, you know, factors like that, that's a great area and a great pressure, right? Like, how can I get my staff onboarded quicker? Because otherwise I'm going to burn out the rest of my staff that are here and I don't have enough people. Dan, what would you add? Any other pressures you see for towards automation?
I think we've kind of touched on it, but it's the sort of drive towards efficiency, right? You mentioned, John, the small margins, really anything, any opportunity to drive efficiency can really make a significant difference. And if you're able to automate those sort of routine, sort of more simple tasks, even though, I think there are some more complex tasks able to be sort of automated more nowadays than perhaps in the past too. But certainly as a starting point, automating a lot of those repetitive tasks can really drive efficiency, especially, looking at skill shortages, whether it's on sort of the frontline staff or sort of back end staff, including IT staff, IT skills, that type of thing. I think the other thing I think about here as well is how automation can improve access to care. So if you can put in place processes that can make it far simpler to get care to the people that need it. So, perhaps a good example is, online appointment booking, automating that kind of process and having it really front and center so that a much higher proportion of people are using it rather than perhaps going through sort of more traditional methods of, picking up the phone and having somebody needing to answer that phone and manage those schedules and all of that kind of thing. And then I think the other point here is around patient engagement as well. Sort of, the more that you can actually engage with patients, providing relevant and timely information, reminders of upcoming appointments, things like that. That's certainly improving the patient experience, and you're engaging with that. You're showing more value. You're providing useful information. Etc. And I see that as another area that again can be a differentiator in the market and can certainly help boost that the relationship and interaction that you have there with between the healthcare organization and patients.
Yeah, I'll throw two others. One kind of relates to what you said, Dan, which is that patients have an expectation of a certain experience these days. And I think that's getting pushed forward by the Amazons of the world. Walmart has Walmart Health, right? Like all of these retailers are getting into healthcare and they're changing what we think of the experience. And, I often have said that, what do you think about Amazon? One click buy, convenience, one day delivery, right? Even whether they can deliver that in healthcare, it doesn't matter. Like in your mind, you're saying this is going to be a better experience, right? And what's the brand of healthcare? Long waits, sit in the waiting room, sit on the phone line waiting, it has the opposite brand, right? And so, many of these automations, I think we need to embrace to keep up with the rest of the experiences we have in the rest of our life, right? The retail experiences we have as consumers, I think that's one pressure that's saying, hey, we better automate this because patients aren't going to put up with it. And the Amazons of the world and the Walmarts of the world are going to come after us. So I think that's one pressure. And then the next one is that I think people, they just can't get enough people to do this, right? We can't hire enough staff to be able to do everything that we need to. And so it's interesting. Like I would say 10 years ago, when we talk about automation, that a lot of people would be like, well, I'm afraid for my job. What does that mean for my job? And now they're like, please bring me automation because I'm doing three people's jobs. So please help me out. Like, I'm not afraid of losing my job anymore because I'm doing three people's jobs. And so I need your automation to solve this. So I think that's been a bit of a sea change as well. Well, let's dive in. I mean, Charisse already commented on a few, but Dan, let's talk about what are some areas that you think healthcare organizations can embrace automation today and be able to solve, you know, whether it's a compliance issue, whether it's a branding issue, whether it's a, you know, efficiency issue. Let's dive into a bunch of examples and let's see how many automations we can throw at people over the next few minutes.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, you know, bringing in some examples from some of our customers, perhaps, you know, we've got healthcare organizations who are seeing real benefit, you know, coming back to the point I made around sort of automating a lot of sort of repetitive and what can be quite time-consuming tasks. So even if you just take the example of, you know, in our space around email signatures, you know, that can... Let's be honest, nobody wants to spend time on email signatures, right? There are far more important things to be delivering and focusing on, you know, than that. So that's one area that a lot of our healthcare clients have really sort of taken to, where they can just automate that whole process, especially with high turnover of staff and sort of new staff coming in and out. That can be a really burdensome process. Whereas if you've got somebody starting and without having to do anything, automatically they have the right branding, the right details at the bottom of their email, the right disclaimer displayed on every email that goes out. You know, those are things that, yes, they contribute towards compliance, but it also means that there isn't been a person having to tweak all those dials, push all those knobs to actually make that happen. It just works. And, you know, the same really goes on the marketing side, where, again, you know, establishing trust. Yes, you've got to protect data and people have to feel safe dealing with you, but you've also got to have a strong brand. And one of the ways that, again, our clients are sort of reinforcing their brand is through their email communications. Every time you email a client or a patient, you know, that's an opportunity to establish and reinforce your brand, what you stand for. You know, people see that consistency. It's a feel-good thing as well, right? If people get to interact with you and they know that to always look out for a particular thing, like in your communications, they rely on that to say, yeah, this is who I think it is. If that's missing or is different, it puts that doubt perhaps into their minds as, you know, am I actually dealing with who I think I'm dealing with here? So, you know, there are a lot of those sort of back-end pieces that are important and sort of we're seeing clients see good success with. I think the other one, perhaps a little bit sort of less related to our world in signatures, but I think still really important is around sort of data sharing and access. You know, I think it's obviously important to manage access to data so that it's only accessible to who needs it, when they need it, all of that type of thing. But also in sort of modern healthcare, you know, the sharing of healthcare information and data is so important so that you're not delaying things just because somebody's got to go from one location to another location and they have to wait for their data to catch up with them type of thing, right? So you can, there's a lot that organizations are doing at that data level to make sure that all of those sharing setups and automations are in place to allow for sort of faster, more efficient delivery of healthcare, and to meet those expectations that we as consumers, as patients, you know, just demand and expect today.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, the signature example is fascinating because, you know, I'm going back to even the reputation of the organization. And you know, I think it's kind of where you started, where you said we need to build trust with the patients, with our partners, et cetera. And when you see an email signature that, like, the link doesn't work anymore, it doesn't go to the right place, it has the wrong branding, it has an old name, it has an old logo, right? Like, all of those things, let alone the compliance issues of, you know, hey, this shouldn't be disclosed, it needs to be kept, you know, like whatever disclaimers required. I see that often, even just, at Healthcare IT Today, when we get all these emails from people, I often look at the email signature and click on their link, right? Or click on their LinkedIn profile or whatever it might be, to understand it. And when it doesn't work, in my head, I'm like, wow, this person doesn't stay up on things. And and I think in healthcare, that becomes problematic. Because if I don't trust you to do your email signature right, do I trust that you're keeping up with the latest medical? Do I trust that you're, taking care of my data properly and keeping it secure? It just adds in that little bit of doubt. So anyway, I think that's a really interesting one. Charisse, anything you'd add?
No, I would piggyback on that. I think the patients, you have to protect that environment. No matter what kind of communications you have with your patients, because I always say communications with patients has to do two things every single time, educate and build trust every single time you are in contact with them. So if your workflows are not doing that, like sometimes I'll get with the behavioral health ones, they don't put disclaimers in their emails about the privacy statements and that type of thing. And I always have to remind them, this is very important. You may not think it's important, but I guarantee your patients are looking for it. So just those type of things. And sometimes even your credentialing, some patients, depending on their level of education around privacy and compliance, they will ask those questions and you have to be ready to answer them. So if you've let things go by the wayside, or you don't have a program or an automation in place to make sure things are updated, you're going to be eroding trust. So I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Well, let's throw out some other examples of automations, that I think are improving organizations. One of my favorite that I see almost every organization doing is around fax, which I know Charisse loves faxes. So I thought it would be fun to bring that up for her. But to be frank, the tools are there to really improve this process. And what's happening is they're coming in as digital faxes now, first of all, and then they're actually being identified and sorted automatically using AI, using natural language processing, using OCR on top of the fax image to be able to get the data and sort it. And when you think about that automation, it's so beautiful because a human was doing it before. So that was time consuming and expensive to do. The second is the humans are fallible, right? The automation is too, right? But at least this, now what happens is it automatically identifies who the patient is, where what category of fax it is, where it should be routed, and then the human verifies it. And so, now you get the best of both worlds where this AI automation on the back end is taking a fax, which every organization gets thousands of faxes still, unfortunately. But it automates that, and it actually improves compliance, because I can't tell you how many times I've talked to organizations where the fax was attached to the wrong patient, or which is obviously a HIPAA violation, has all sorts of care implications, etc. So do automating this for them and giving them essentially a second set of eyes to improve the quality of how that's being tagged is a great example. The other one I love, automation wise, is a rev cycle. When you look at the revenue cycle on healthcare organizations, it's the perfect place for automation. And my favorite example of this is low balances. So let's say you have a bunch of low balances, which by their nature, you don't want to spend a lot of money on collecting because you're not going to receive a lot of money back. And so then what do they do? A lot of healthcare organizations just don't collect them. They just say, forget about it. Well, with technology and automation, they can send it out and the bots can go and collect those low balances. And then it makes sense to collect those low balances. And that can be, a great value to the bottom line of healthcare organizations. So I love it for low balances, collections as well. Especially now that you literally can send an email to get a payment or a text message to get a payment. So you can really automate those revenue cycle things and be able to collect, the payments that you deserve. So I think those are a couple other examples. Any other you'd throw out, Charisse?
Well, I think actually I love the ones that you cited, but me, first of all, I can't stand to hear the word facts. It just makes me nutty, but I will give credit where credit is due, because those processes have become more digital. I guess it's the way, as I call it, your ex can just stay around. So yeah, the fax is still here, whether I want it to be or not. But I always like the idea of registration processes where you can use automation there, because those are the places where you can provide convenience to not only patients but also frontline staff, so they don't have to do a lot of repetitive tasks. So I've always loved the idea of the registration process and the discharge process, using automation to get things done. And to your point of rev cycle, the idea that a patient can hit a text on their phone and pay their bill, that's convenience. That's being seamless in someone's life. So it only makes sense that we would have automation to those type of processes for both pay or for both provider and patients.
Yeah. Well, and there's a kind of a question comment that I'll throw out there for you guys from Kathy. She commented about, she's hoping that automation efforts will start first from the patient perspective and kind of asked, how might we improve the patient experience of care using automations? Yeah, Charisse, I think, just highlighted one with the payment one. Anything you'd add, Dan? Look at it from the patient experience perspective. How can we use automation to improve that? And, should we step back and think more from the patient perspective is a really good question.
In short, absolutely. I mean, that without the patient, there is no
There's no
business,
care.
right? So they do have, patients vote with their feet as much as consumers and customers of other services do, right? So you have to deliver a really compelling and solid experience. A couple of examples I'd throw out there as well are things like automation through things like chatbots, right? So just being able to for people to interact online without necessarily having to pick up the phone and speak to somebody, because let's be honest, like increasingly we don't want to talk to people, right? We want to get done what we want to get done, and we want the answers that we want, but we don't want to have to talk to somebody. So if you can go online and you can actually have an intelligent sort of conversation with a chatbot where you can actually get answers to, those common questions, the things that you're wondering or whatever, for me, that adds a huge amount of value. It's the same as when I want to go out for a meal, I want to be able to book a table online. I want to be able to book an appointment super easily without having to jump through too many hoops, again, without not having to actually get on the phone and speak to somebody. So really having that kind of facility automated, where all the schedules are aligned, I can see what's available, I can pick what's convenient for me, not just what's convenient for the provider. That's a huge value add in my mind. And I think when that comes full circle as well, once a service is delivered to a patient, automating that sort of satisfaction kind of assessment, if you like, actually going back to the patient and saying, how was your experience, right? Did we deliver at the level that you were expecting? Where can we improve? All of that, those types of insights, I think can be driven. Well, you can drive a lot more insights by automating that process, because then, as soon as a certain triggers, that request for feedback goes out, people can provide that input, you're far more likely to get higher volume, but also better quality, because it triggers automatically. You're getting to somebody when that experience is still fresh in their mind, rather than however many weeks down the line when they've started to forget because they've moved on to other things.
Yeah. And we see a lot of automation in like the pre and post surgery space, which is kind of a similar one as far as ensuring that they're doing what they need to do. I think that's an interesting area that we can use automation as well. We see a lot of organizations working on those workflows. My favorite automation that I think, goes to Kathy's point about patient perspective. And ironically, this technology is not positioned as a patient focused technology. It's usually focused as a provider focused technology, but I actually think it's better for the patient than it is even for the doctor or caregiver. And that is ambient clinical voice. So if you're not familiar with ambient clinical voice technology, essentially it's the doctor goes in usually with their phone, although it could be a microphone on the computer in the room. He basically says, hey, I'm going to record the visit. Is that okay? And they hit record. And then they just set their, essentially a microphone, their phone or another microphone there. And it automatically documents the entire visit, does the note for them, you know, even does granular data elements. And some of them, you can actually interact with them. You can ask them for lab results and things like that. And you look at that and you say, what a beautiful automation. And my prediction is that 80%, maybe 90% of doctors are going to end up using ambient clinical voice to be able to automate the documentation of their visits. What's beautiful about ambient clinical voice is it's a better experience for the doctor. It's going to be better compliant because it's going to record everything. And in fact, it's recording the transcript of how it came up with the data that it's documenting. So you can look at both the data that it, you know, essentially the generative AI note that it created, but you can also look at the transcript of what was said. So, you know, that's another compliance benefit, right? But then, like I said, it's most beneficial to the patient because now the doctor is not sitting there typing on the keyboard. I mean, it angered me when I would take my kids to the pediatrician and he sat there on the computer typing the whole time. I knew he was listening, right? Because he would ask questions. What about this? And he's like, shh. And you're sitting there and you're like, it's a little awkward, right? Like, you know, you're like, wait, I know what you're doing, but like, can you pay attention to me? Can you look at my kid? Like, and then so ambient clinical voice is going to allow people to do that, but also to do it in a compliant way, in a way that drives revenue, in a way that does everything else that we want as well. So that's actually one of the best automations that I see on the horizon is ambient voice. And just to throw one other out there, because I told people we'd throw as many as we could in a short period of time. But, you know, one that I love is security breaches. It turns out, you know, there's so much happening, whether it's, you know, people trying to hack your system or whether it's internal people viewing the wrong records or going into the wrong place. How do you do that at scale? And the answer to that is AI and automation. So you use the AI to sort through all that data and say, hey, Charisse never goes into this patient account, or she usually doesn't view 70 people. She views 20. Why did she view 70? And then you can flag it for your compliance officer to be able to know, hey, these are the ones you should maybe investigate. And then they look into it more and see, you know, maybe there was a legitimate reason, or maybe there wasn't. Of course, you know, you also have the Britney Spears factor, right? You can automate those types of things as well. Like, oh, did they look at a record that they shouldn't have because Britney Spears was at the hospital? So, you know, I think those are some interesting automations. And then the same is true with breaches. You know, you have to use AI to automate that to ensure like, hey, is this a normal activity for this server, for this computer? And the technology is there to really do that. So I think that's another kind of cool use of technology to be able to automate it. Any other automations you want to throw out there?
Well, I was going to go back to the ambient voice one. Yeah. I can't even believe I skipped over that because of the one of the other points I would make about those is that they help the users, they help the organizations, you know, generate their compliance reports. And so things can go where they need to go without a lot of heavy lifting. You think about like the MIPS regulations and all the different SDOH things we have to do. And a lot of those enhancements collect that information in real time and will send it where it needs to go without a lot of heavy lifting. And I find that fascinating. I think it's wonderful. I think a lot of it has to do with how much we're using and getting more dependent on AI and kind of going down the rabbit hole of how much can we do with this? Or so I think it's pretty promising in that way.
It is for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. And by the way, anyone watching live, if you have any other questions, definitely let us know. We'll incorporate those as well. But Dan, I'd love to hear what you think about how can IT teams be an enabler for other parts of the business. Sometimes, you know, IT is just seen as a cost center, but and hopefully most are shifting that mindset. But how are you see where IT teams can be enablers for other people? You know, I have a few examples as well, but I'd love to hear what you think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, as you say, I think, you know, I think that the opportunity is for IT teams to be proactive and actually, you know, offering opportunity. And I know that's increasingly happening today. You know, I think one of the areas is sort of providing the right tooling, right? Again, so just drawing on some of our customer examples, you know, email signatures used to be a very sort of IT centric thing. It was seen as an IT problem.
Submit a ticket.
Exactly, right? And every single one of those tickets is somebody's time. They've got to jump in. They've got to do the same thing over and over again. It's like, oh, can you update this? Can you update that? So what we're seeing is actually IT teams delegating access in a secure way, you know, using things like role-based access controls and different sort of user privilege levels to, for example, give marketing teams the ability to put the different banners onto the bottom of emails, right? So depending on who that email is going to, the right information is actually included, right? Whether it's providing useful content, for example, coming up to the holiday season, maybe it's giving some advice that's pertinent at the time, or it's including that meeting booking link or the appointment booking link in the bottom of the email and so forth. And so what that's doing is it's enabling marketing and other teams potentially across the organization to not have to rely on IT, and it's freeing up IT time because, as I said before, you know, updating email signatures, not the best use of time, right? So the more that you can automate that function, you can have stuff happening, you know, without human intervention, but also actually delegating to other teams, letting them self-serve. I kind of think about sort of self-service as a form of automation, if you think about it that way, right? If people can do it really easily themselves, something that would take somebody else much longer to sort of work through, then that's actually being more efficient. And in some ways, I guess you can look at that as automation. You know, I think one of the things that we're seeing as well is, I guess one of the whole purposes of sort of centralized signature management is that consistency and to have sort of tamper-proof blocks of information, disclaimer, whatever it is you decide to have going out on those emails. But at the same time, IT teams are giving end users themselves the ability to actually update certain fields themselves, right? So a good example that we're seeing is giving individual employees the ability to update their personal pronouns on their signature, right? You can do that in a way that doesn't give them access to all of that sort of compliance stuff and the information that you don't want changed. You don't want somebody giving themselves a new job title all of a sudden, or uploading the logo of their favorite football team or something like that. But you do give them the ability to go in and, I don't know, update their pronouns or update to their latest telephone number or whatever it is. So again, I think that self-serve motion and IT enabling other teams, I think, is we're seeing a lot more of that because it, you know, it has benefits on both sides.
So what do you have against their favorite football team? I'm just kidding. No organization wants that. That's for sure. I think someone needs to tweet that out too. Self-serve is a great form of automation, or is a great type of automation, because you're right. That does. I was just thinking about the whole process, and I'm literally tech on Twitter. So I was the guy that would update the email signatures. And you think about that whole process, and this happens so much in healthcare, where it's like the requester doesn't want to make the request because they know it's going to take a long time. And the person doing it doesn't want to do it because it's a boring task, right? Like, it's a boring, repetitive task that they don't care about. They'd rather be dealing with some other bigger, you know, IT complicated problem, right? So it's the perfect example of an automation. I love that. You know, another one that I saw was for people that are doing research. Often you need to roll up some sort of instance of a server, a virtual server, to be able to do some, you know, analytics or some AI evaluation of some data or something like that. And, you know, you think about the process, it's kind of similar to what you just described with the signature, where it's like, okay, I got to submit a ticket to IT for them to create a virtual server that then creates the, you know, that then I can use for a certain period. And then, you know, I can finally get access to it and I can do my analysis. Well, they've automated that. you know, which is crazy to think about when you look at, you know, virtual servers and things like that. But there's literally people who can fill out a form and a virtual server is created and the credentials are sent to you, and you now have access to do that. And that was another simple automation that empowered people to be able to do what they needed to do and to do it in a compliant way. Because we know what the alternative was, right? Before they offered this, the alternative was, I'll just roll up my own server that's not following mm-hmm. security protocols, that's not, that IT doesn't know about. They have shadow IT, you know, or they'll just go off and do it in the cloud or things like that. So I think it's another example of IT enabling their users, their researchers, their analytics people to be able to do what they need to, but not have the overhead of having them have to do it. That's another great automation. Cool. Well, Charisse, do you have any other automations or there? Or, you know, I'd love to hear also, you know, how do you get buy-in for some of this too, right? I mean, you know, it's great to talk about this, but, you know, and unfortunately, the status quo is easy to maintain and change is hard. So how do you look at getting buy-in for some of these efforts?
Well, I always say the why informs the buy. So with these organizations, one of the things when you talk to them about automation and compliance, they're going to think challenge and costs. Like, how much is this going to challenge us? How much are we going to change? How much are we going to have to build? What is it going to cost us? So I think what's most important is to have them understand why they're putting these things in place and how it can make their organization better and why it'll save them money long term. Because, you know, generally these organizations tend to look at the short term like, oh, this is going to cost us a lot of money, which I think in some ways is also a myth if you do the true valuation of what a automation costs. But you want them to understand why they're putting it there, why they need it, and why it's going to save them that money long term. So I think you should spend a lot of time doing those things, getting the why, and then in turn will get them to buy into what you're trying to get them to do. I have spent with the clients I deal with, I go in with the why first before I even pitch, like, hey, this is what I want you to do. It's like, here's where you are. This is why you're here. This is why, this is why, this is why. And then I go, here's how I think you can solve this particular problem. And that in turn gets them to listen a little bit more. And so I say that to everybody, the why informs the buy. If you can't tell them why they're doing it, they are never going to buy into why you want them to do it.
Nice. Dan, how do you look at kind of getting buy-in from staff on implementing these things?
Yeah, you know, it's there may be people who sort of see a lot of this sort of automation as a potential threat, right? Not only is it a change, but it's a potential threat. You know, I think that there are a lot of people who see, you know, AI and automation as what's doing us all out of the job, isn't it? But actually, if you can actually, you know, to Charisse's point, where, you know, you can explain sort of the why we're doing this. Well, as an example, we're putting in this automation because we want you to focus on people rather than paperwork, right? We don't want you spending your time on that admin stuff, which takes a huge proportion of time. We want you right at the front line, delivering service, delivering care, you know, and even for people who are in the back office. You know, the same is true. You take out a lot of those sort of repetitive, thankless tasks, let them focus on something that actually has a higher value to the organization. You know, and I think again, sort of coming back to the compliance kind of piece, you know, using automation for compliance to drive trust, you know, so, you know, trust being a competitive advantage in the market, helping your organization to grow. From a personal perspective, you know, if I'm an employee of a growing organization, I've got far more opportunity open to me than if I'm in an organization that's really struggling, right? Because in many of those situations, companies are cutting back, they're not expanding. So if you're looking to be, you know, in an environment that's growing, that has opportunity for progression, for personal progression, etc., then the more efficient those organizations can be, the more differentiated they can be, the more high growth they can be, actually creates opportunity for you as an individual. And again, it's coming back to the why. In this case, the why is, well, because you have personal ambitions to grow your career or do new things or try different things, right? So it's kind of trying to find what's important for those individuals and for people, and sort of using those points to explain the why, and this is not a bad thing.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's finish this off with a look at the future. Is there an automation that isn't being talked about today that could be automated in the future? Maybe I'll start, and then Dan and Charisse. The one that I would love is prior auth. Like, prior authorization is like the death of every doctor, and the amount of time wasted by nurses and doctors on the phone trying to get prior authorization, especially for things that can be automated. And by the way, this is slightly being worked on, but to do it at the scale that it needs to, it's still far away. But I would love to automate prior auth. I think Dr. Glockenflecken, the comedy doctor, he talks about it and says, we need to get insurance out of the decision making from doctors. But yeah, Anyway, that's kind of a separate point. But I would love to automate that for doctors, because the prior auth is a part of insurance and ensuring that doctors are practicing the right way. But if we could automate that, then I think everyone wins: doctors, patients, even the payers, will win, because they spend a lot of money, approving the prior auths as well. So that would be mine. Dan, what would you add?
I think we touched on it just at the top of the call, but things like clinical decision support, things like that. I think the opportunity for AI to analyze data faster, support better decision making. I think that can only go one way, and I think it has a benefit for both doctors, practitioners, as well as patients, right? To know that you're sort of using that combined knowledge, combined learning, and intelligence to make better decisions. So I think that's one area. I think again, sort of just coming back to sort of perhaps some back office tasks as well, whether it's purchasing task automations, automating IT and HR sort of question answers, that type of thing. Just some of those are pretty straightforward to do. There's some really strong tooling available today to allow and enable those types of things. I think there are some organizations already sort of going down those lines, but I think there's a lot more opportunity still there.
Yeah. I saw an incredible automation at UiPath where they literally use generative AI to say, plan my trip to this conference in Japan on May 6th to 7th. And it went through and did like the whole plan, booked the hotels. Mm-hmm. I mean, so the technology is there to automate some of that HR and that travel requisition, et cetera, stuff. So that's really interesting. Charisse, what would you add? What are we looking at in the future?
Well, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on the prior auth, because we all hate the prior auth situation. And I always say a good fisherman always sees another fisherman coming. So I think prior auths are going to be less of a problem in the future. I think that insurers and companies who now require prior auth say that, hey, Amazon is starting to make things look a little bit more convenient for patients. Maybe we should lessen the prior auths that we're doing. And I see a lot of that movement there. So I don't think prior auths is going to be a huge area for automation, because I just don't think they're going to exist to that level anymore. Mm-hmm. But for a pharmacy, the whole pharmacy system for patients, I think, is a huge area for automation. If you go to any pharmacy now, they kind of look a mess behind the camera, where a lot of automation can still be done, right? And definitely for clinical decision support, 100% behind Dan on that.
Awesome. Well, this has been a really great discussion, and I appreciate Exclaimer kind of bringing us together for this webinar. Want to give Dan just, a couple of minutes to talk about how Exclaimer can help people, and a little bit more about what you do to help organizations, improve their compliance and their automation.
Yeah, thanks, John. If you pop to the next slide, I just a brief overview here of who Exclaimer is. We've been in the email signature space for over 20 years. We actually sort of started the space, as the first sort of email signature management solution in the market. We've got over 60,000 customers today, and really the value that we bring to those customers is around the centralized control, consistency, compliance, obviously, but also maximizing, essentially maximizing the opportunity of every single email sent. And really sort of thinking about not the sort of mass emails that sort of go out from these automated systems, but it's that one-to-one interaction, especially. Some of that is automated, and some of it is true sort of personal sort of one-to-one, but every single one of those communications is an opportunity to build trust, an opportunity to communicate, to engage, and ultimately sort of make life easier for both sides. On the next slide, John, I just sort of wanted to give a few examples of sort of where our healthcare customers are seeing value today. So we've talked a lot about sort of streamlining processes and using automation to save time. And really it's that centralized, efficient control of signatures across the organization, knowing that all of the information going out is accurate because it's actually automatically synced through your user directory, whether it's Active Directory or Google Directory or, you know, based on whatever platform or backend sort of communication system that you use. And as I mentioned before, actually also sort of delegating some of that access to other people within the organization, for example, on the marketing side, where, you know, they can self-serve to make sure that the right information is getting to the right people at the right time, right? You know, so that's a key one. We talked obviously a lot about compliance and sort of touched on security, but, you know, certainly one of the reasons why a lot of our customers initially adopt a solution like Xclaimer is to help support that compliance effort, making sure that those privacy statements, those disclaimers are consistently applied, you know, no exceptions, you know, making sure that you're protecting patient data and privacy, you know, and certainly any vendor, you know, not just in the signature space, but really any vendor that a healthcare organization is working with, you know, looking to make sure that those vendors have the right certification compliance credentials themselves, right? Because choosing the right vendors can take you a lot of the way to where you need to be, simply by piggybacking off all of the work that they've already done, right? Doesn't alleviate the burden completely, but it certainly gets you a lot of the way there. And then, you know, I talked a little bit about the patient experience, you know, and just being reassuring to patients that when they receive a communication, it's professionally branded, they feel they can trust it. I mentioned this already, but like around appointment booking links, things like including symptom checkers at the bottom of emails, these are all sort of that patient engagement, patient experience type of initiatives that can really make a difference. And again, making it super easy for people to leave feedback based on their experience. Again, we see a lot of clients including a very simple, you know, one-click survey on the email signature just to make it front and center for people so that it's really, really easy to engage with that and actually leave your thoughts, leave your feedback, so that organizations can improve their service. Just on the next slide, John, you know, this is just a sort of just touching on, you know, some of the relevant sort of healthcare organizations we work with around the world. And, you know, I'm not going to read these quotes out. You can see them on screen here, but, you know, really sort of just reinforcing that that conversation that we've had today around, you know, standardization, automation, just making things easy, removing manual repetitive tasks, you know, just taking that one additional thing off the plate of either an IT department or a marketing team or an HR team, you know, just to have things set up and not have to think about them really, and just knowing that they're happening and they're happening in the right way. And then just on the final slide here, just for anybody who's looking for any additional information about Xclaimer, what we do, the different sort of use cases and solutions available, to see what some other healthcare organizations are doing with our service, simply just click on the QR code here on screen and that'll take you to the relevant information. That's it from me, John. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. It's really interesting. I know we're at time, but there was one question that came in. What email systems do you support? Is it all of them? Or I imagine the standard ones, Outlook, Google Suite, or whatever it's called officially now.
Yeah, so Google Workspace.
That's it.
Hard to keep up sometimes. It changes the name quite regularly, it seems. But yeah, Google and Microsoft both Exchange on-prem, as well as 365. Those are the key platforms.
Gotcha. Great. Well, thanks everyone for watching, and appreciate, you know, if we were, can we give a virtual round of applause to our panel? You really enjoyed this. I learned a lot from you all through this process, and thanks everyone for watching, and appreciate doing that. We will send out the recording, so if you want to share that with any of your colleagues or other people like that, we'll definitely send it out after. And appreciate Exclaimer for hosting us and being part of this webinar. So thanks, Charisse, thanks, Dan, and thanks everyone for watching and listening. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Have a great day.